You're listening to PX Pulse, a regular podcast bringing you fresh voices on critical issues facing HIV prevention research today. On March 21st, Uganda moved forward broad-reaching legislation to further criminalize LGBTQIA people. The bill would make it a crime to even identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer, with sentences up to life imprisonment. It gives authorities wide powers to crack down on anyone who does not report on same-sex couples or who promote gay rights, including prohibitions on news coverage. And the law could impose death sentences in some cases, including for the transmission of HIV. Uganda's President Museveni has the power to stop the bill, but so far, he is issuing statements for other African countries to follow Uganda down this path. Anti-gay hate laws are sweeping across the region, with recent action in Ghana, Kenya, Nigeria, Rwanda, Tanzania, and Zambia. After the news broke, AVAC and partners came together for a call with advocates in Uganda. They are fierce and imperiled voices who are readying to fight for LGBTQIA people in Uganda. But at AVAC, we know they're fighting for all of us. On the call, allied advocates dug into the specifics of how these attacks have gained momentum and their ties to U.S.-based religious extremists. And advocates discuss what needs to happen next. In the following conversation, the voices we hear, in order, are Richard Lusimbo of Sexual Minorities Uganda, or SMUG, Ruth Muganzi of the Uganda Key Population Consortium and Chapter 4 Uganda, Kenneth Mwahange of HEPS Uganda, Angelo Kagwa Katumba of AVAC, Lillian Moreko of the International Community of Women Living with HIV Eastern Africa, or ICWEA, Mitchell Warren of AVAC, and Jim Pickett, an AVAC advisor. First, Richard, then Ruth and Kenneth explain conditions right now in Uganda.
The last weeks have been very dramatic, but also worrying and concerning. In record time, we had a legislation from Parliament passed within 6 weeks, which also showed how much the members of Parliament or the Speaker was hell-bent to have this legislation passed, but also due processes have not been well followed, like having over 30 days as mandated by the law to have public hearings. And all that didn't happen. And as we're all aware, the bill was passed with 75% in support. And there are a couple of things that have really happened. There's been concerns of safety and security for the community, but also what it means for the programming that we're all passionate about, because those will be taken and looked at as promotion, which would mean we cannot even provide services to the community because of this legislation, but also people identifying who they are, it will be criminalized. And of course, there's the push for death penalty. But I also want to say that as a community and allies, we've come together in the process of fighting this bill, and that's under Convening for Equality, the CFE. And this is bringing communities together, bringing allies and partners together. Last week, we had a retreat to discuss the legal options. If the president goes ahead to sign the law, the bill into law, then definitely we'll go to the courts of law to challenge the legislation. So there's also that front. And also, we're looking at how we can provide safety and security because cases are increasing. We've been seeing demonstrations across the country by various religious leaders. And this is actually putting more at risk the people, but also ourselves who are known. It's a concern because we don't know what will happen if this bill is passed or signed, and what kind of danger we face, I can never explain. But one thing I know is that at the moment, I work with my eyes also on the shoulder. So if the president doesn't sign or send it back to Parliament after 30 days, it automatically becomes an act of Parliament and automatically becomes a law. And this is why we're doing everything possible and asking partners, those who have direct contact with the president, that he needs to do something. And this something should be done as soon as possible so that we are able to know what our fate is. Are we taking the legal side? Or do we think we have gotten a bit of life for the next 10 years? It seems every other 10 years, we come back to the same issue. But I think what we really want this time as a community is we want to deal with this once and for all, because we can't continue living with this kind of fear all the time.
In terms of how we as LGBT people on ground currently feel, it's overwhelming, first of all, to know that over time, again and again, our parliament comes to the question of the use of LGBT people to cover up so much political questions. Because you realize that when the issue of LGBT people came to criminalizing LGBTI identities came to the floor of parliament, there was a lot of debate going on in terms of corruption and misuse of public funds. And just like we've seen in the past years, the use of our lives and our identities comes in, is used as a political token by politicians to cover up questions or issues that they feel that the public could have so many questions about. So you give them LGBT people under the cloak of we are recruiting children. How else do you get people to be angry unless you tell them children are being manipulated or recruited? The last time we had, we are gift for money. Now we're recruiting children in schools. But as the LGBT people on ground, we would love to push this conversation in a more radical way, to say our lives cannot be simply a token for politicians to cover up misuse of public funds or corruption cases. We need to ensure that this time around, we are very intentional about ensuring that the fight for LGBT equality and non-discrimination goes, or that we are not willing to settle for technicalities like so in the last legislation to say there was no quorum to pass the bill. We would love to have our allies out there and people who understand what it's like to live as a criminalized identity, because the new law goes beyond simply criminalizing the act of sex to now saying we cannot organize, we cannot identify ourselves. We literally cannot have information that is pro-LGBTI out in public spaces. We cannot share information. We know that when you look back on the history of our organizing, information that affirms our identities or affirms who we are, to say you're not the only person when you're struggling with self-identifying, to see other people publicly speak that I am a lesbian woman who has lived in this Ugandan culture, as oppressive as it is, but I own my identity, I am free to live. That self-affirmation is very important for many of us. For many queer people who are simply coming to start to identify themselves, it's important for us to have that information present. And now the new legislation says we can't even have information that says, as an LGBT person, these are the places that you can access healthcare free of discrimination. This is what it means. Gender diversity or sexual orientation can be diverse, and it is okay. You are not an anomaly to identify as transgender or lesbian. But what I know from my community is we are a resilient lot. We are willing to take on this fight, but we're also conscious about the need for us to turn this conversation away from being sexual objects or simply the conversation being about recruiting children, because people need to understand that there's a very big difference. And I hope that where the president's mind is at, where he needs to have scientific facts that affirm that we are not recruiting children. Because we've seen, even in 2014, when the president was signing the bill, he said he needed scientific facts to speak to. Is it nature or nurture that creates LGBT people? And this time around, we would feel like there needs to be radical voices. We also have to understand the political question that is currently present, that the last election was quite intense for Uganda as a country, the rise of a younger opponent. And we saw the conversation on LGBTI people start then, where the LGBTI community was being linked to the opposition to say that the LGBTI people are the ones supporting the opposition. There's a political question in there that we need to be conscious about. And we have to be conscious to know that even as we go into the next election that the president is looking towards, that so many politicians in this parliament are also looking towards the run towards that next election. But my movement, my community, my friends are very resilient and very intentional people. We intend to fight this, it will take time. And we need voices out there speaking out to, say, educate the president, as we say. But we're going to fight this.
This bill targets everyone. And whether you're heterosexual, whether you're LGBTI, it targets everyone. And it's something that puts at risk the gains we've had in terms of reaching the criminalized populations, in terms of health services, and even those allies of the LGBTI community. We are targeted as promoters. So it's something that has different dimensions these times, and they've mobilized like everywhere. It's never like this before. We're seeing attacks on the MPs that were opposed to the bill and people swearing that they should never step back in their communities. They will undress them. And that's the sort of environment. I know they might use it as a tool to distract the country from the other transparency and accountability issues. However, this time, I think it's way beyond that because they've mobilized practically everywhere. They started in the communities and it came as opposed to the previous one, which was top down. This time it's bottom up. And that's really, really concerning. And I think it will take quite a lot to have the situation under control. And it's very, very worrying for many of us.
And just to throw a little bit more light on the implications for even allies, is they're not just criminalizing homosexuality and related behavior. They have actually thrown in HIV, aggravated homosexuality. I think the charge now also has if, you know, it leads to HIV infection, and that's the death penalty. So they've brought HIV into this as well. So it does touch all of us. If any organization or media house publishes material promoting homosexuality, they risk a $300,000 fine and revoking of your license for 10 years. That's just publishing. If you dare publish anything that the government says is promoting homosexuality, that's what you get. I think to Ken's point, this touches all of us.
The fear is real and it cuts across. And even the strongest people that should be out there speaking against this are living in fear because you don't know what happens next. The attacks are real on social media. Individually, people are being attacked. We've really received attacks day in, day out. And it seems like the movement is bigger. And what I see as the biggest challenge to the communities being in danger is service delivery is going to really be affected. And the conversations are really tense, and it feels like nobody wants to be seen or to be supportive just because of the social media, what is going on, people being beaten up, you know, people being harassed. And you really see people saying, if I see anybody who is even seemingly like supportive, I'll kill them. I'll kill. You know, like people are like to that level. And I think one of the other dangers that we are in is that all this has taken us away from the bigger issues that we are faced with. For instance, nobody is talking about gender-based violence. Nobody is talking about defilement. Nobody is talking about all these other issues that are bigger that we've been struggling with, that we think are big issues in our country, but everything is being focused on one area. And I think important also is as ICW together with HEPS Uganda and Sexual Minorities Uganda, we are leading the implementation of the community-led monitoring. And we have monitors in over 50 districts. And it is yesterday when we had a meeting because the monitors have been threatened, our monitors have been attacked in some districts. And so the situation is getting to that extent that the communities are now, it becomes hard because at the national level, there's some little level of being sensitive and holding back. But in the communities, people are not holding back. And I think that's what Ken was talking about, that the bottom-up approach in terms of how communities are addressing this. And as you can see, the bill is comprehensive enough that it won't leave any stone unturned. And therefore, if there's a way we get rid of this bill in the nearest time possible, I think that's what needs to be done.
That was Lillian Morocco. All these voices paint a stark picture of conditions in Uganda and what's at stake as this legislation awaits Museveni's decision. It's vital to understand why this is happening now in so many places. Richard talks about a well-documented U.S.-based anti-gay movement working in African countries to push gay hate laws. For some of the press coverage of this movement, go to the landing page for this podcast at avac.org to find links. Richard and then Ruth talk about how these laws stem directly from this evangelical movement and how it gains influence in Uganda.
That issue really started from the right extremists who have been coming to our country in the name of missions. And as you'll see from the first law that got nullified, it had clear traces, including sexual minorities Uganda suing Scott Lively, an American evangelical from Springfield, Massachusetts. So it has direct concessions to the extremists from the United States. And they do this in the way of funding churches, building schools, building hospitals, providing safe water through boreholes. And what this all does is that they build trust within the communities. So they become the proper saviors whose word is later on believed as gospel truth. The other thing that they've been very systematic at doing is from time to time having seminars and workshops and meetings with our policymakers, but also pushing for the change in wording and language in our policy documents. And this is something that we've been taking for granted, but they started dismantling. This is why you see at WHO, language around MSM is being thrown out by countries. It's not coming by surprise, but it's been very, very systematic. The other thing that we find ourselves is that we are dealing with a geopolitical question here, where we are seeing the American evangelicals joining Russia in this process. And the hand of Russia is very vivid in this too, in Uganda at the particular moment. And unfortunately, we Ugandans find ourselves as the pawns in these bigger nations fighting and trying to insert influence. So we find ourselves at a crossroads, but also at a very tricky moment whereby it's either the West or it's China or Russia, which is really making our life very difficult.
Do you think helpful to kind of call out that connection to the right-wing evangelicals in the U.S. as part of that, Richard, in terms of people's statements and advocacy here?
They need to be called out because they are responsible. And I think there's no better way to do it than people in the U.S. holding them accountable. They need to know that every LGBTQ life that we are losing, that blood is on their hands. And they must know that, and I think they should be called out. And many Americans are donating lots of money, thinking they're building churches, but what they're doing is actually building a wing for homophobia in this country and other parts. And if you look at how it's been growing, it's the same thing they do in every country. If you read the legislation that is in Ghana, it has the same language, like what we had in the first bill in Uganda and the same what they're trying to propose in Kenya. So you really look at it, it's very systematic and they use the same script and they have the cover of government officials. And this is something that we don't have as communities.
Thank you, Richard, Ruth, Kenneth, and Lillian for sharing all of this. This is also directly happening on the ground in the United States and is getting worse and worse and worse. And terrifying, is absolutely terrifying. But we see, at least I'll say from the United States perspective, when you share facts, it doesn't change anything for people who are already kind of there. And so I'm wondering the best way forward, recognizing that for people who are deeply entrenched in this hatred and this misinformation, facts may actually entrench them further. So I just struggle with how to change the narrative towards a factual direction, knowing that for these folks, science isn't going to change their opinion and nor are facts. So I wonder if you all could kind of comment on that.
As LGBTI people, we've existed in our societies without people discriminate us by looking into our bedrooms to see what we do with each other. The facts that we seek must speak to the fact that what is imported within our societies is this anti-gay rhetoric that is pushed by religion, that is pushed by financing from Western nations. Those imported narratives, because they're not coming from our everyday societies, the fact that they are rooted in religion, religious groups that are coming as foreign entities into this space and allowing politicians to be bold enough to speak about how LGBTI people should be castrated. It's the import is not we, the everyday Ugandans that have never had a chance to cross borders or learn our sexual orientations or gender identity from foreign entities. We have been here. When you come down to grassroots communities where we live, for so many of us, where people have come to understand that we are their neighbors, we are their children, because facts need to be known that when you say you're protecting children, we are also somebody's children. We are children of this nation. We need to be very intentional about educating our societies and saying they're giving you this narrative of LGBTI people are the problem. But when you look at the everyday reality of a Ugandan, we all suffer the same injustices that they're trying to turn people away from. Let's be factual. When people start to complain about the lack of services in health systems, the broken down education systems, the poor service delivery, you give them LGBTI people as if we are the issue to distract them. There are corrupt systems that are robbing people of access to services that would benefit them. It is not the LGBTI people that are causing that. It is not us that are robbing our cultures of morality, or those are the words that they use. It is this imported hate. It is allowing people to be bold in their hate and hate mongering. And there are other broken systems that are the problem. And we, our lives as LGBTI people, are simply used as a distraction. The LGBTI movement here has organized itself. We've done a lot of work to ensure that we are able to own our voices. We have strong leadership that must be allowed to speak to what our realities are. Yes, our allies have access to rooms that we are yet to have access to, but space must be created for LGBTI people, leaders like Richard, who have done so much work to ensure that we are organized and able to have voices that are empowered or own our narrative, can step into those rooms and speak to our reality. This is a time when allyship needs to be intentional. You cannot step away from speaking up simply because the cost of speaking up has gotten high. When we speak, I believe that the everyday Ugandan is much more able to understand, because if they are hearing us and seeing our voices and seeing our stories and understanding what our realities are, it humanizes the issue that they fear. It humanizes the challenges. And they come to understand that we are the same. It's a matter of life and death for us.
These veteran voices of HIV activism are fighting to protect hard-won gains in HIV prevention. They're fighting to advance justice. They're fighting for their lives and for a world that is safe for all of us. We must bring everything we've got to the struggle. We must ensure they prevail. In the days and weeks to come, there will be actions, appeals, protests, and more. To join the effort, find contact information for Convening for Equality at avac.org/PXPulse. You've been listening to PX Pulse, recorded in the New York City studios of the Relic Room. Our theme music was composed by Alexi Stevens. Our engineer is Sam Baer. I'm Jean Barron.